It's now time for Nature's Path on Dublin City FM 103.2, the program that helps to bring positive changes in your life. Today, as a special tribute to Dr. Michael Curry, I want to bring to you an interview I did with him and his partner, Dr. Anya Trubridy, a little while ago when they were talking about their book, Depression and Emotion, Not a Disease, and the Depression Dialogues meeting that are being held once a month. Yeah, maybe you would like to tell me a little bit about what prompted you to write this particular book.
Well, it came out of our clinical work, just seeing so many depressed patients, but also it came out of a group that we began to run, it's about 2 years now, called Depression Dialogues, where it was a gathering place, a forum for depressed people and their families or for healers to come and air their views about the subject, what's helped them, what's hindered them, ask questions about medication, etc. You know, so it's been a very moving experience for us over the 2 years, hearing the stories, hearing the dissatisfaction with the current model, hearing just the pain, you know, experienced in hospitals, on medication, etc. So we wrote, out of that came the book, really, because it became so clear to us that this was not a disease, and it needed to be redefined.
And the dialogues continue. Mm-hmm. They're on the first Thursday of every month. And if anybody wants information about them or wants information about depression itself, we have a website called depressiondialogues.ie. So it's www.depressiondialogues.ie. And there's a lot of information on that site. There's a lot of links to other sites. And people will be told when things are happening. For instance, we're planning a conference, an international conference, for Dublin on the 21st of October. Some very good speakers. Dr. Peter Bregan, he wrote a book called Toxic Psychiatry. He's coming over to Dublin as well. Yeah. So it's a way of keeping in touch with the world of service users and providers.
So you trained psychiatrist yourself.
Right, yeah, that's
but
correct.
You became dissatisfied with some of the more traditional methods, treating depression.
Yeah, I was fortunate insofar as that I worked in other branches of medicine. I worked in obstetrics and I worked in pediatrics. And mm-hmm. I did some surgery for a while when I worked in Africa. And when I came back to Ireland, again, I went into hospital medicine mm-hmm. and would have done more obstetrics and would have been a tutor in medicine for a mm-hmm. while in Jervis Street. So when I switched across then to psychiatry, I realised that the scholarship that there was in mm-hmm. other branches of medicine did not apply mm-hmm. to psychiatry. Mm-hmm. That in fact psychiatrists were treating phenomena which were not of a disease status. Mm-hmm. Like for example, if you get depressed because you lose your job and you're faced with financial ruin and you go to your doctor and you explain your story and the doctor says, yes, you are depressed, here's a prescription for some SSRI, Prozac mm-hmm. or Zyloxat or whatever. And just as you're about to cash in that prescription, the phone rings and you're told you've got your job back. Mm. In fact, you've got promoted. Mm. Now, your depression will lift
instantly
because there's good news.
Yeah.
Now, that will not happen if you have diabetes or you have cystic fibrosis or you have multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So we're not dealing with a disease. So for doctors to be treating something that's of a psychological nature by physical interventions is fundamentally wrong. In fact, I would say it's malpractice. And years to come, I think we will look back at psychiatry and we will say, what in God's name was going on there? Mm-hmm. People were being given years and years and years of medication. Their body weight
the
many
terrible
times
terrible side effects.
The terrible side effect. People have had ECT over and over and over and still there's no change.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, and lawyers will be asking the question, so doctor, you were treating something that wasn't a disease, didn't respond as if it was a disease to the various medications that you were offering, and this person is still unwell, and in fact is brain damaged.
Mm.
I think we have an action here, and this is what's going to happen.
And with no blood verification of the so-called chemical imbalance, not a blood test done.
Like there's something, again...
Never.
you use that analogy, Anya, of the
in medicine, if there's an anemic patient who's losing blood, obviously, or they wouldn't be anemic, you don't just keep shoveling in iron. You look for the cause. It's a very basic thing in medicine. If someone has a broken leg, you don't just keep giving them morphine. You set the leg. You know, and this just hasn't been done in depression. You know, they just keep giving the medication and not looking for what has caused this person to move into a different chemical state. Now, all the emotions are a chemical state. Anger is a chemical state. Being in love is a chemical state. So is sadness. But they're not imbalances. They have moved away from normal. But, you know, they're not something to treat. So this was the basic premise of our book, is that if it's related to as an emotional response to the setbacks of life, then a whole different avenue opens up. We're talking psychotherapy, we're talking the person looking at their own resources, their own coping skills, and it's an entirely different avenue than this is a disease, take the appropriate pill. Oh, everything stops then, no responsibility on the patient's part. The family back away, that's the person with the illness. Where can we put them? And what more can we give them, you know, to take by mouth? So we just felt it was time for a complete shift in terms of how we see things.
And the news is good, because if you're saying that depression is an emotion, that it is a response to a setback, it is a response to a trauma, there's a very clear cause and effect relationship. And we like that. But if you turn around as a doctor, as a psychiatrist, to somebody who presents with symptoms of depression, you don't look for any cause. You just say to the person, you've got a chemical imbalance and you've got to take these pills, and perhaps you might have to take these pills for life. Now, I think of itself, that's such a bad message, because I believe that if I was, with my hand on my heart, if I was told that I had a chemical defect inside of my mind that needed corrective medication, possibly for life, I would lose confidence in my mind. I would lose confidence in my own abilities. And I would seriously think of checking out. And I'm sure there are people who commit suicide who have been told a very, very depressing picture. They've been told, you've got a chemical imbalance, this medication is going to fix you. They try the medication, and of course it's not something that can be readily fixable, because it could be that they were bullied at work or in a difficult relationship. So the drug obviously doesn't work, and it's not a disease anyway. They go back to the doctor, there's another trial of medication, and another trial of medication, and meanwhile time is going by, side effects are mounting. And that person may say, I have an incurable disease. What's the point of living?
My life is ruined.
What is the point of living?
You talk about psychotherapy and other method, and all these methods would really work long term, but say if somebody is in a crisis, you know, it takes a few months, maybe even a few years of psychotherapy before you really, you know, in some cases, you know, when it's a chronic situation. So what would you suggest to those patients or clients initially? Would you maybe still encourage them to take medication for a short period and start psychotherapy, or would you have something else that would help them initially?
I would never prescribe an antidepressant. I think they're dangerous. They've got side effects, they're linked to self-mutilation, they're linked to suicide, they're linked to the suppression of all desires. I mean, a lot of people feel they lose their sexual desires. A lot of people feel curbed. I mean, we've been using the analogy, it's like you're three lanes of traffic, suddenly you've reduced it into one lane of traffic, and most people feel that they're zombies. Most people feel that their emotions are some way curtailed. They don't feel the sadness, but they don't feel the joy either. And they feel there's something artificial going on. Somebody coming to me in a crisis, that in fact is possibly the best opportunity for change, is when there's a crisis intervention. And when you sit down with the person and look at what the crisis is, and bring in the necessary resources to help that person, you can bring about profound change, particularly when somebody is in crisis.
I mean, it is a case of you're either on the bus or off the bus, you know, and especially when there's a crisis. If that's the time when you just go for the pill, it's, you know, the family aren't mobilised, everybody's thinking, you know, the appropriate measures aren't taken, like completely withdrawing from work, you know, if you need to. Go quiet, understimulate yourself from all stresses, get the support of family members, you know, get the permission from the workplace, you know, create a sanctuary experience at home. You know, mental hospitals are extremely traumatic places, and there's many a person has gone in a bad way and come out even worse, post-traumatically stressed from their stay in there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the time to mobilise the family and mobilise the person into thinking, yes, this is a crisis. How have I got myself into the? How have I got myself into this hole? And what am I going to do to get myself out of it? And and that may mean psychotherapy. And it may mean long-term psychotherapy. And yes, it may mean that the life has to radically change. But we have to decide, are we going to be a quick-fix culture? And then later on we're going to be saying, but I'm not really better. Or are we going to go for more, you know, long-term gain? Because the revolving door patient is the one that got a little bit better quickly and then fell back. And they got a little bit better and fell back. And in and out of hospital like yo-yos. Because the social, the skills, the psychological skills are not being put in place in between each episode. So, you know, when the medication wears off and the newness and they habituate, the life thing is still there. You know, or even if it's not a blatantly obvious thing, the psychological reaction to, and sometimes it can be quite existential, quite abstract, and you know, needs a deep, you know, good psychotherapy to ask the hard questions about disillusionment and disenchantment, and that maybe deprivation in childhood, not enough of the basics. Sometimes it can go way back, you know. So it's a good that a crisis happens, because then out of that comes something new.
Out of that, out of a crisis comes change. And if you have somebody who's been bullied at work, I mean, they really do need to have to do something about that immediately. Either they change their job, or they go about a grievance procedure, or they consult a solicitor, but they have to take action. If somebody is in a destructive marriage, a destructive relationship, a violent relationship, they have to take action. And what terrifies me sometimes is that when people are going to their doctors complaining of real life issues, they're being put on medication, which in my view is blunting their response. I mean, if you're in crisis, you do not want to be on medication. You want to be able to take it on the chin. You
to
have
process
to be
it, you know,
fully alert. Because if you dumb yourself down because you're in a difficult situation at work, or you're in a difficult situation within a marriage, or you're in a difficult situation relative to your finances, and you, or a difficult situation relative to your children, and you dumb that down, then you're only making it worse. You're only deepening the crisis, and you're preventing change. And in the bigger scheme of things, if we start medicalizing social problems, living problems, life problems, if we start getting into that, and we've been doing it, medicalizing social problems, we are holding back social change. We are holding back social
policy
reforms
and legislation. And
we have children now who've started to come to the institute because the exams, this is the Institute of Psychosocial Medicine where we work, they're starting to, I saw a young kid today,
this time
who,
of year.
Yeah, who was put on medication, antidepressant medication, to help her, in fact, to overcome her fears and anxieties and worries.
So now, that's very insidious.
And that's very insidious. We're starting very, very, very early. Instead of saying, what is wrong with the examination system? What is wrong with the schooling system? That we end up having to put a child on antidepressant medication. So as doctors, as psychiatrists, we really have to go back to the drawing board and think more clearly about what it is we are going to do with these social problems, because we cannot medicalize them anymore.
Today I'm talking to Dr. Michael Corrie and Dr. Áine Tobriety about depression and the latest book called Depression and Emotion, Not a Disease. So you were telling me, Michael, about your work as a psychiatrist and the need to address depression in a different way. And I was wondering if you could maybe explain to the listeners what exactly you recommend, what are your circuit breakers, if I can speak that way. I think you mentioned the word circuit breaker in the book. I remember the one that I remember was first thing in the morning, get out and go and walk or run outside. So is that to kind of change the mind frame before you have time to actually get into your usual thinking pattern, is it?
Yeah. I think that's an excellent idea. I think a lot of people, when they are depressed, they do entertain very depressing thoughts.
Mm.
There's like a continual running video showing them evidence of how bad their life is.
Mm.
As a voice going in their head, reminding them of how they don't have control. Anything I do makes no difference and I'm a failure. And there's a tremendous sense of helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all going on at a visual, intellectual, at the world of, you know, imagination. And then also you've got behaviour, whereby the person's behaviour is very sluggish. They're sitting around, they're not taking exercise.
Mm.
And meanwhile, if you can visualise, they've also got this huge feeling on board, feeling of hurt, feeling of loss, feeling of betrayal. So between their thinking and between their feeling and between their lack of activity, they're really quite stuck. So it's vital to break in at some point and bring about change. And obviously the place to break in is at first is at the level of action. The person, get the person exercising. And I mean exercising, where they're getting out and they're walking, they're going to a gym, they're swimming, they're re-establishing their connection with their body by physical activity. And of course they're changing their molecules.
Mm.
They're getting their energy up, they're getting their chi up. Also, their mind, in the morning time in particular, when the mind kicks in, because as you know, when you wake in the morning, your life is fired at you point blank, so they are instantly reminded of who they are and off starts the tapes.
Mm.
So it's a good idea that before the tapes kick in, before all these nasty thoughts kick in, they're up, they're out, and they're out walking.
Mm.
They've broken the cycle.
Mm. And it's important, I think, just to add here, because it's the first question that everybody always says back to me is, but it's the motivation to do that isn't there.
Yeah.
And I would have to throw right back at them, yes, but you know, an angry person doesn't want to stop their rant.
Mm.
You know, they'd rather continue on,
mm.
you know. And an alcoholic would rather continue on drinking, you know.
Mm.
And like a mother in the middle of the night often doesn't feel like getting up a fourth time to an unsettled child. But we have to do these things if our goal is a specific one, you know.
Mm.
So, you know, I'd have to say to depressed people, unless you want to just take it lying down, you really have to do the difficult thing. It's the last thing you feel like doing, but you got to move that chi and get the stagnation over and get ahead of your mind before it starts to, you know, run the same tapes as yesterday.
And really what's important here as well is that there is nothing as important as mental health.
Mm.
I mean, there is no health without mental health.
Yes.
Mental health is our spirit, mental health is our soul.
Mm.
Mental health is everything. I don't know of anything as important as mental health. And for some reason, we're not pushing, we're not advocating that people have to protect their minds.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the title of our conference in October is going to be called Protect Your Mind.
Right.
And we're going to have a day where we're going to show and demonstrate through international speakers how this can be done. Because there is nothing as sacred as the mind.
Mm. And people will go on about, oh, psychotherapy, but that's very expensive, isn't it? And yet, you know, they'll go out for meals, they'll, you know, go out for a night of drinking, they'll, I mean, you need to put your, you know, money where your mouth is. And really, some of these problems really do need good psychotherapy.
Mm.
You know, they're old problems that you almost, they're so part of your normal way of thinking, you hardly know you're thinking them, or that they shouldn't have happened, or that you're hurt over them.
Mm.
So, I mean, we would prioritise that, not for everybody, but for most people, to have a little look at what was the cause.
Mm.
And then the other, you know, energy boosters, like, you know, exercise and like acupuncture and the other energetic methods of healing, like homeopathy.
Mm.
You know, so there are plenty of ways for people to go about it.
And psychotherapy, the word psyche means soul, and therapia means attending.
Mm.
So psychotherapy actually means about attending to your soul.
Mm.
Most people will say that if they go through a crisis, if they go through a psychotherapeutic process, they come out the other end, in fact having learned a lot, They come out knowing perhaps...
Wiser.
Yeah, they're wiser, they have a better sense of their life purpose. Because they've identified the cause, they've made the necessary changes. And for me, the centre of psychotherapy ultimately has to be teaching that person to love themselves, to respect themselves, teaching that person to open their heart to themselves, to show themselves compassion, and also teaching that person inner peace, inner contentment.
And to do it for themselves.
And to teach them how to
effective.
Do it for themselves. So there's if you like, there's the problem-solving aspect. And then there is the growth aspect, where you're actually helping people to find ways to love themselves, to find ways to accept themselves, to find ways of ending self-hatred, old patterns. I mean, we would say you could empty the psychiatric service in this country of its people if you could wave a wand and get rid of fear and get rid of self-loathing, get rid of self-hate, which seems to be, you know, central to a lot.
A classic, you know, example is the number of people who are having panic attacks for possibly decades and are depressed because any of us would be depressed if we're facing that every day. But the panic attacks have never been addressed. And they've never been taught the simple skills of managing that. So it's almost as if the depression is being focused on, when that's a normal reaction to trying your best to shift something and feeling helpless to do so.
And an excuse that's used all the time is that there isn't enough counsellors, there isn't enough money, psychotherapy is very, very expensive. If we're really saying that we really privilege the mind, that the mind is sacred, that the mind is the most important thing that we can care for, there should never be a question of money. It would be like going in to have, say, a triple bypass. Because there's a shortage of money, they only do one bypass. And you wake up and you're told, I'm sorry, we ran out of money, we just did the one, come back next week or two weeks later. It's ridiculous. There should never be an excuse when it comes to health. And particularly when it comes to mental health.
It is until the swing in medicine is made in the direction of away from the, all the research money being put into pharmaceutical approaches, you know, I mean, there needs to be a lot more psychotherapy training, a lot better standard, a lot more people available to treat more of the public, you know. So, but that'll never happen until the swing away from the medication.
The medical model, which is that you are suffering from a disease, take these pills, has to be deconstructed. It has to be destroyed. I've been looking at new publications from the government relative to the psychiatric services, beautifully published books about with wonderful titles, with butterflies on the cover, entitled Vision for Change, beautifully written, but totally and absolutely hopeless. Because they're still holding on to the medical model.
And we're kind of saying, look, at the emperor has no clothes, okay? And you know, the more people we talk to about this approach, they're saying, yeah. I mean, we've all been looking at it and we've been seeing that, but nobody's put their hand up and said it. And we're not the first to say it. Other people have been saying it, and the critical mass is rising. But, you know, I think the more people that resonate with there is some truth in this... The quicker it'll change.
You have a website?
Yeah, the website is www.depressiondialogues.ie. There's a lot of information. It's a good site, I must say. We're very proud of it. We're getting about 100, we're getting 1,000, in fact, unique visitors every week.
Every week.
That's 10,000 hits as well. So it's a lot of traffic through a website, and we're really, really, really proud of it. And there's some very good information on that. And also, I think the book itself is a good read. It tries very, very, very hard to put forward a plausible argument that depression is not a disease, that it is an emotion, and that we have been conned into believing that it is, if we still believe it is. It just isn't.
You are listening to Nature Space on Dublin City FM 103.2, special tribute to Dr. Michael Corey, and our deepest sympathy to his partner, Dr. Áine Tobraidy. May Dr. Corrie's work continue through the Depression Dialogues and the foundation that he created, and through all the people who share the same belief as he did. Thank you, Michael, for all your insight and dedication. It's now time for a guided meditation, as we do each week. If you aren't driving the car, I recommend that you find a suitable parking space, put your handbrake on, so you can fully engage in this meditation. You might be able to lie down or sit in your favorite armchair. And when you're ready, close your eyes. Part your lips just enough to release your jaws and bring your awareness to the breath. Notice the breath flowing in, the breath flowing out. Notice the depth of your breath. Becoming aware that with each breath, there is the opportunity for a new beginning. And with each out-breath, you can release yourself from the past. No matter where you are, this place is called here and now. I invite you to use your breath consciously. With each out-breath, you are letting go. Sometimes you know what you're letting go, sometimes you don't. Releasing all the memories, all the time when you felt hurt, unloved, lonely. Releasing all the stress, the anxiety, the confusion. Releasing the pain, whether physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. Releasing everything that is preventing you from being totally in this moment. And the more you can release as you breathe out, the more space you create for a new beginning, a new way to be. With each new breath, you have the opportunity to start over again, to be this person you long to be. Stress-free, carefree, loving, loved. You are beautiful. Breathe in this feeling. Breathe in new confidence in yourself. You are perfect with all your imperfections. Fill your heart with love. Feel this love pouring through your whole body, coming from the highest and purest source of love. You are completely filled and surrounded with love. Nothing can harm you. You are wrapped in this cocoon of love. This is Marie-Angeline Lascaux on Dublin City FM 103.2, the program that helps to bring positive changes in your life. You can find out more about this program by visiting www.yoga-healing.com, email springintolife@yoga-healing.com or text 086-824-2033. Until next week, have a wonderful week.